Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everybody. I've had an absolute blast recording your championship intros on audio and also on video. And for those of you that didn't know, the videos can be done special exactly the way you like them, because these are green screens and we can do them with a scene behind me. Do you want a fighting scene? Do you want a beach scene? Do you want a race car scene? Any scene you want, we can give it to you. It's your theme and my pleasure. Just write our offices and we will answer you with the exact fee involved and how it'll get done. So here we are, and now it's time, and it's your choice. Cheers!
From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of Phoenix, Arizona, where the UFC is coming. We are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show where we talk about what you think about, but maybe afraid to voice. We'll talk about it for you. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, politics, UFC, you name it, we talk about it. I'm here with my co-host, TJ DeSantis. Another week gone by. TJ, you're good?
I'm good. I'm ready to go to Phoenix, Arizona, as my kid calls it. Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah.
And my boy used to call it Phoenix, Arizona.
Arizona,
so
all right.
I had a hard time saying it, so all good. Man who may have a hard time saying it only because he's from the land of the Queen's English, the way it should be spoken. So when he says it, however he says it, that's the way it's meant to be said, okay? So now let's bring on my good friend, man I've worked with for years, man I've announced for years, a true role model of the sport, and I'm a huge fan. None other than UFC champion, Michael the Count Bisping. Michael, how are you?
I do believe it's pronounced Phoenix, Arizona.
There we go. Got it. Queen's English documented.
You know what's funny? To bring this full circle, if you go back to the Ultimate Fighter 3, which Michael Bisping was on, they used subtitles for him and Ross Poynton. Now, I will say, Mike, I didn't know what Ross was saying most of the time. But I would be offended if I were you to have subtitles on your speech on that show. But I guess you're getting paid to speak for the UFC now, so it's all good.
Yeah. To be fair, my accent has changed a lot over the years as I've got older, certainly since I lived in America as well, because when I first moved there, people couldn't understand me. So to be fair, you know, yes, they did need to subtitle me, but I do find that funny how they used to subtitle me, but now I present the show. Just shows how much it has changed, to be honest.
This is an example, as your life is an example, of a true evolutionary process. And I got to say one thing before I go into that. Listen, Michael, when I first started traveling England, when I went to Liverpool for the first time, I thought I was in Greece. I couldn't. I'm sorry. I had a hard time communicating.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
You know, to be fair, there's parts of the U.S. that are the same way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but Liverpool's hard. Yeah. And some of the real thick accents, a lot of the British people can't understand them either. You know, so don't feel too bad, Bruce. You're not on your own.
All right, good.
Well, that's I think fun. You can hear him on display, like with yourself, Mike, Dan Hardy in the past, John Gooden. Like there's just those three accents alone are pretty different from one another.
Yeah, that's right. You know, like where I'm from, it's a small town called Clitheroe. If you go up 6 miles down the street, it sounds completely different. The accents are so sensitive. You know what I mean? You don't have to go far for it to change. So I do find it quite fascinating. I'm guessing it's because, you know, it's an old country and, you know, way back before there was cars or people, you know, like traveling around on horse and carts or whatever, I guess they got together in little towns and that's how they spoke. And down there, they spoke like that and they never intermingled, I guess. Who knows? Who cares? I ain't no historian. I'm a knucklehead.
Well, you're always willing to admit when that's the case, right, Michael? As I am too.
You shouldn't agree quite so fast, Bruce. Come on, mate.
Okay. Hey, listen, I want to get into something that's very important to me. TJ, I don't know if you had the chance to see Michael's bio documentary, Bisping, the Michael Bisping story.
I've not seen it yet. No,
I can't, but highly recommend this. If UFC fan, MMA fan, sports fan, human interest fan, family fan, whatever, this is a film for everybody. This is not just about wanting to watch a film about a fighter fighting. This is wanting to watch a film about a man's true evolutionary process where he came up the way he did in a firsthand account where he literally transforms into the young man that he was to become a journeyman, to become a world champion, to buck the odds, as we'll go into in his last three fights, which is still absolutely mind-boggling to me, even though I knew about it on the inside a little bit. When I hear it for reality, it just blows me away. So we have to talk about this. I started this film at 12:30 at night when I saw that it was Netflix, right, Mike?
No, it's Amazon Prime or Video On Demand, wherever you get that right now.
Pardon me, Amazon Prime. That's where I watched it. And I started at 12:30 thinking, okay, I want to see what it's like. I got to get up at 6 in the morning. I got a film schedule the whole bit. TJ, I was captivated. I had to watch the whole thing. I could not stop watching this film. Michael, if anybody gets to know you, they know the man that you are, as I've gotten to know you, but to see this film, for people to see what you are like behind your guns, your family story, the beautiful, beautiful, one of my favorite parts of this whole film is just your beautiful marriage to your wonderful wife, Rebecca, and how from the age of 18, this wonderful woman stood beside you through thick and thin, and your changes in your personality and your own maturation process to be, if she's not an example that truly behind every successful, amazing man, there's a wonderful woman, however that term is said, I don't know how else to put it. She's a true example of that, for real.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I'm very, very lucky. She, through thick and thin, as you say, Bruce, and it got very thick and it got very thin at times. the money was thin and the trouble was thick. And she stuck by me throughout it. Well, first of all, just want to say thank you for the kind words, Bruce. Truly do appreciate it. The feedback that I've had, to be honest, has been unbelievable. I never expected this. I mean, I think just at the Apex alone on Saturday, you were one of them. I think 7 or 8 people came up to me and were saying how they were blown away. People saying they were brought to tears and things like that. So, you know, it's very, very nice. Universal Studios almost also emailed and said it's one of their biggest documentary releases ever of all time. So that was very, you know, welcoming news. But yeah, you know, I mean, I was a little nervous at first, you know, because I'm very honest on there. But yeah, you know, how did you, I'll tell you a funny little anecdote, how this whole documentary came around.
That was my next question. Go ahead.
Yeah. So they were supposed to do one on a certain Diaz brother. he may have fought against Robbie Lawler last year. Right. And he never showed up for the first few days of filming.
Oh, how on brand is that, though?
Exactly. That's what you want from Nick Diaz. Do you know what I mean? He never showed up for the first two days of filming. And they were like, we can't work like this. We have a lot of money with a budget. And someone said, you know what? Michael Bisping, let's go with him. So thank you, Nick Diaz. If it wasn't for Diaz, this documentary wouldn't have happened. But so far, an incredible response.
Well, that's proof that marijuana is a wonderful thing, I guess. So, you know, it can definitely cause you to be late for work.
Oh, yeah. Sleep in a little bit. Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, when I went through this, and I'm not trying to plug my liquor right now, but I made this because of people like you. This is a true example of what a puncher's chance is all about in life. You are truly an example of that. There's no question. And, you know, it goes through like, Michael, you had what, like over 200 street fights, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a lot. It was every week. There was multiple per week. You know what I mean? I was out of my mind. See, when I was younger, I didn't know any better. I saw a lot of violence growing up, and I thought it was normal. And to be honest, I wasn't a popular kid, and I was bullied, and we didn't have much money growing up. And not that it's a rich town. It's really not. It's a very working class town, but it's an upper working class town. And we were very much lower working class. So people used to make fun of us and stuff. You know, my shoes were always falling apart and stuff. And then I came to a point where in my life, I just got sick of it. And I said, you know what? The next person that talks shit, part of my language, I'm just going to crack him in the face. And that's what I did. And things started to change. And then all of a sudden, I started making friends. And now all of a sudden, I was in the popular circles because I was like this tough guy Do you know what I mean? So I've kind of been reinvented. And that caused me to lean into that persona even more as a child, you know, as a young adolescent. So I kind of became this guy. I was always getting into fights. If somebody thought they could beat me, then we'd meet up. And of course, that's no way to live your life. But, right. You know, I'm talking 15, 16, 17 here. So, yeah. You know, I was lost. I was a very silly little boy.
I hate to say it, though. I think there was a time and place for that behavior. Like today, you can't really settle things one-on-one outside anymore. You know, someone gets shot. It seems like
a damn shame. Yeah. Well, of course, with the guns, that's a whole different conversation. But yes, you're right. You know, once upon a time, if you had a problem, like in my town back in the day, I remember if we were getting in a fight, the police would come up, they break it up, they go, right, you go that way and you go that way. And if you don't, you're going to spend the night in the cell.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and we go our separate ways. These days, you look at somebody. In fact, on the news yesterday, and it's a whole different subject, I guess, I saw on an English TV show, I still watch those, on Amazon Prime, once again, they're saying to stare at somebody now is being considered, they're considering making it an illegal offense, which is just wild.
Do you realize with that statement, we are getting closed down on how we can communicate to man or woman, we're getting closed down on what we can say. Now we're getting closed down on how we can look. I mean, pretty soon we just might as well look straight forward and walk around like a bunch of zombies. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, pretty soon we'll just send out our robots to do all of our errands for us, and we'll
they're
never
already
have
delivering
to look at
packages. Yeah. I saw one of those little R2-D2 robots in Santa Monica the other day. Like, what the frig was that?
Well, in Shanghai, they've got like these robot dogs walking around trying to see if anyone's breaking the lockdown rules. It really is like we're living in a science fiction world these days.
Just remember, Michael, I say it all the time. Everything in film has come true, from Buck Rogers to space travel. But let's just wonder and hope, when does Road Warrior and when does what is the other one? The Harrison Ford movie, Blade Runner. When does Blade Runner and Road Warrior take place?
Well, Demolition Man. I don't know if you remember that movie.
I love that movie. It's Demolition.
Great film. You know what I mean? 5D credits. You know, you use bad language, you get fined.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's overly PC.
I don't want to have the sex with the friggin' orb in my hand. Okay, that is not whatever they had sex. Remember they put on the helmet.
Right.
That might be fulfilling, but that's not exactly.
I don't remember that bit, Bruce. Trust you to remember that.
Of course, I remember it. He's with her in the room. They're about to have sex, and she pulls out this little thing to put on the head. And
That's right. Sandra Bullock.
Yeah. Is this the one with the three shells?
Yeah, correct. With the three shells instead of toilet paper.
Yeah.
I remember being a little kid when I was watching that, and I was like, okay, I'm going to grow up one day and figure out what the hell the three shells are for. You know, I'm just too young to know.
I still don't know.
No.
You know what? In Brazil, you know, there's certain practices like that, you know?
All right, we're just going to leave that there.
We'll leave that there, but I'll leave it at that. But anyway, that's the story there. So I got a little track there when you went off track.
My bad.
Hey, one thing I'd like to say, Mike, about your story. I saw someone on Twitter the other day say, who became a UFC champion that you didn't expect to? And my answer was Michael Bisping. And one thing that I think really sticks out about your story, Mike, is you were one of the probably hardest impacted fighters when competing against other athletes on TRT and things like that. It seemed to me like, you know, the sport did you kind of dirty, you know, in that sense, in your era. But you came back and really took control of your own destiny. And obviously you are a UFC champion. Was it hard to ever not just sort of look at the hand you were dealt prior to becoming a champion and just going like, what the F? Like, what am I doing here?
Well, no, not really. The sport never did me dirty. Those cheating foul bastards did me dirty. That's who did me dirty. People that take steroids and I don't know how they can look at themselves in a mirror. And when you're competing, listen, if you're a grown man and you're not competing, yeah, of course, do whatever makes you happy. But if you're competing in an octagon, then I feel there should be a certain moral code that one abides to, and they're not doing that. There were certain times, you know, certainly when I lost the vision in my eye, I was, you know, you have your dark moments where you kind of, for want of a better expression, feel sorry for yourself and think, I don't believe this has happened to me. And then when I was still continuing to fight, the doctors were always warning me, Michael, if anything happens to your other eye, you're going to go blind. And I always said, well, lightning doesn't strike twice. You know what I mean? I lost vision in one eye. It ain't going to happen to the other eye. You know, and then right at the end of my career, I did start having problems with my other eye. And I was like, I don't believe this. Talk about the worst luck in the world. But you know, you can't live your life like that. You know, I had a great career. It led me to a life that I never thought I would live. I'm working with the great Bruce Buffer every couple of weeks. You know, I'm living in California. You know, I mean, this career of mine brought me a life I never would have dreamed of. So no regrets whatsoever.
You know, it's a life that you've been able to provide beautifully for Rebecca and your daughter, Elle, and Callum, your son. And, you know, just, I love watching your lifestyle. You know, I'm a German Shepherd lover. I love the pictures of you when you have your dogs, and I've shared mm-hmm. moments with you.
There's little Alfie right there. There he is.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. They are our children, no matter how you cut it. Michael, when you were diagnosed in 2013 after Vitor's fight, you know, with the eye injury and such. I mean, they talk about in the film how the last three times, if I'm correct, that you fought, of course, with the knockout of Luke Rockhold on 2 weeks' notice, if I'm not mistaken. Was it really actually 10 fights that you fought, or was it three fights with one eye and 10 fights with eye injury? Can you lay that out for us now that you've been so open about it?
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, I lost the vision in my eye shortly after the Vitor fight. I mean, I had the Alan Belger fight, but I wasn't aware of the condition then. I still had the detached retina. Because what I was doing, I'd be in restaurants, and restaurants are often dark these days. And I started off, I'd be like, I can't see my fingers there. Oh, so you can't see them either because I'm out of shot. I'm like, I can't see my fingers. Is that normal? And my friends were always making fun, saying, oh, he's doing that thing again. But eventually it ended up to where my hand was right in front of my face. And I'm like, right, wow. Well, I know this isn't normal. So I called a doctor and they looked into it. They said, yeah, detached retina. So they repaired it. Then it re-detached. And then I got a glaucoma. And it's a very long story. It's in the documentary. It's one of the worst 48 hours of my life. The pain was just insane. Anyway, they did an emergency surgery. They put a drain in my eye and then they actually butchered the surgery. So when I woke up, I was in even more pain than what I was when I went into the hospital. So they had to undo the surgery, redo it. And when I came around from that surgery, I'd never saw out of my right eye ever again. But I was determined to still fight. You know, at this point, I'd moved to America. I'd bought this big, stupid house that I didn't need. We weren't financially set. I didn't have a life or a career to pursue outside of the octagon yet. So realistically, I felt trapped. I felt cornered, like I had no choice but to fight, you know? So I did what I had to do to be able to make it to the octagon. I lied, I cheated. It was very, very stressful, because I always thought at any moment, the house cards is going to come crumbling down. Everyone's going to find out. They're going to do an eye test before the fight. You know, and they're going to say, this guy can't see. Do you know what I mean? But somehow, some way, I managed to bullshit them all. That's where it comes into being a little toe rag, a little shit growing up on the northwest of England. Those times paid off.
Well, you know what? Let me just say this. There's two things I want to clarify here. Your idea of cheating and steroid use from others, idea of cheating, is not the same idea of cheating. Yeah. Okay. So I don't really know if I want to call yours cheating.
Yeah, it wasn't cheating. It was just pulling the wool over the doctor's eyes.
Pulling the wool over the eyes and bucking the odds. And the second thing is, there's always that scene in Rocky, you know, when he gets slapped by his trainer because he can't see the hand, right? Yep. And he goes out there and he beats Apollo, right? If that's not an example of the Rockhold fight to me with you, I don't know what is. Right? Yeah. I mean, your life duplicates reality film duplicates your life. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you, Bruce. In fact, in the documentary, one of my old friend and Muay Thai coach actually says that. So there's a little bit of Rocky footage in there. And it's true. You know, I mean, it was very difficult. People always say, how did you fight with one eye? And I always say, with great difficulty. It was not easy. Even to this day, I have challenges all the time, but I've just got used to them. They're the very, very minor things. You know what I mean? I've always been kind of clumsy, which is weird because when I'm doing martial arts, all of a sudden I'm very coordinated. But in my day-to-day life, I'm a bit of a clumsy elf. But when I go to grab things, I'll miss like the first couple of times and I'll get it on the third. If something's on this side because I don't see past my nose, I'm often smacking my shoulder into like door frames or walking into lampposts, or you know, if I'm at a traffic light and I'm having a conversation, like for example, I was in Times Square once and obviously lots of people around and I'm always very animated with my hands and I went, oh, I like this, telling a story, and it's always, I feel something, I'm like, oh God, and I look round and it's always a little old lady and I've just backhanded her in the face and I'm like, I am so sorry. And they look at me like they want to kill me. And I'm like, I don't see out of this eye. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were there. I'm really sorry. So, yeah, anyway, there you go. It does lead for some funny but embarrassing circumstances.
Yeah, exactly.
I can sympathize with Mike. I have something called Duane syndrome. I can't move my eyes left or right. So my peripheral vision is really bad. I run into shit all the time. Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to fight. You wouldn't be able to fight then.
I mean, you just need to say the right things.
Maybe straight down the pipe, yeah.
But. Yeah, so I can move my eyes inward, so like I can go cross-eyed, but I can't look out. So like when I look over my shoulder driving, I have to like close my right eye because I can see with my left eye inward. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah. So if you close your left eye, your eye will move. Otherwise, you're going to do a
No. Both of my eyes can move inward. They can't move outward. Right. So when I need to look over my right shoulder, I close my right eye. And then I can just see with my left eye.
Next time we're together, I'm going to slap you a few times. We'll see if we'll get those eyes moving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, trust me. That doesn't help.
Hey, Michael. Michael, one of the things that came out in the film I never knew and I found completely fascinating is you used to make your money as a DJ.
I did.
DJ Michael Bisping. What was your name? I remember.
Mikey B. DJ Mikey B.
Mikey B. Yeah. Mikey, TJ, this was one of the funniest, coolest things in the movie. I had no idea.
Yeah,
that was just too cool for school.
I was obsessed with martial arts. And then in England, it's about 16 people start going out drinking, which again leads to always getting in fights and stuff because a 16-year-old's got no business plowing themselves with alcohol on a Friday night, you know.
Right.
But anyway, so then when I started going out drinking with buddies and I realized there was girls and stuff like that, I wasn't bothered about martial arts anymore. And I remember I walked into my friend's house, walking home from work one day, and he had a set of turntables. When I was 16, I just thought that was the coolest thing I ever saw. So I saved up, I bought the turntables off him, I started collecting records, and I wanted to be a DJ. And I'm very much an obsessive kind of person. With martial arts, I was obsessed. Now all of a sudden, I discovered I'm going to be a DJ. So I was all in on that for a long time, for probably about 10 years. And, you know, I had a little bit of success. I DJed in a lot of nightclubs and stuff, but wasn't really making a lot of money. And then I came to a point in my life, I'm like, what am I doing? I'm never going to be like, you know, headlining, having a residency at Hakkasan or anything like that, you know? So I thought, right, I've got to do something else with my life. And then that's when I discovered mixed martial arts and put everything into pursuing that.
And one of the other things in your childhood too, is that TJ, Michael explains how I like your dad a lot.
Yeah.
We drop pints together with him and his little buddy that always comes to the show. What's his name?
Mick. Friend's name? Mick.
So you talk about in the film when you went over, I think it was to your girlfriend's house, to her parents, to Rebecca's parents, and they were having a very calm meal, discussing things and everything. You just weren't used to that because you had a volatile father, and it was like always a little bit yelling and this or back forth the table, whatever you communicate. It's like the way he explained to TJ was like he was in a totally different world. He wasn't aware that people were actually relaxed like this, you know. You were so honest.
Yeah, no. It Rebecca's family, I mean, you know, they're great. I love them dearly, and I love my family dearly as well. So that was always I was always trying to tread a fine line in the film. I wanted to be honest. I wanted to tell the truth, but also at the same time, I don't want to throw my parents under a bus. I love them dearly, and my father supported me every step of the way, and we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for him. And I talk about this in the film because I realize now as a grown man some of what he must have been going through. You know, he was a sniper in the army. He was a sergeant major. He had a lot of responsibility, and he toured all over the world on various missions and stuff. All of a sudden, you come out of the army. There's no skills. There's no need for his skills on, you know, as a civilian. All of a sudden, he's pumping gas at a gas station. Do you know what I mean? So I can only imagine the come down, the depression. You know, I think there was a bit of alcohol involved. There was no money. Do you know what I mean? So he was probably going through a bit of depression, PTSD and stuff like that. And yeah, you know, he had a volatile temper. So did my mom, you know, so the entire house was like that. And it was always, for want of a better expression, World War III at our house. You know, Christmases were always crazy. Do you know what I mean? They were always the biggest arguments. You know, it was. And I remember when I first started going out with Rebecca, and I'd go to her house and we'd sit there at dinner, and I'd be like, and everyone's just so polite. And if someone talks, everyone sits and listens. And then they give their feedback when they're finished and all the rest. And I'm like, all right, hold on a minute. This isn't going to last very long. You know, at some point, I can see she's getting annoyed. She's going to throw something in her face. A plate's going to come flying across there. I'm like, any minute now. But no, it wasn't like that. I was like, oh, this is how people are supposed to behave, you know? So not that my parents didn't show me how to behave, because of course they did, but there was just a lot of arguments, you know?
Right. Right. Understandable. You know, I had a very strong father too, served in the Marines for 13 years, World War II in Korea. I'd walk in the room at six and say, hi, dad. He'd say, son, raise your voice. Let him know you're in the room. Shoulders back, chest out, you know?
That certainly paid off for you, Bruce. Let's be
honest. Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah. I mean, he was teaching me fighting techniques when I was six before I went to school for the first time, because that's, you know, that was his whole life. You know, he came up like your dad. I mean, in the war and in the mean streets and everything. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, our parents come from the greatest generation, and there's a lot to be learned from them, you know?
No, I totally agree. And sadly, this latest generation, my word. I don't want to, yeah.
Getting weaker and weaker, Mike.
Correct. Bunch of pussies is what you might say. And I did say that, and I stand by that.
In many cases, you're absolutely correct. It's not the men's men.
Not in all cases. And it's not their fault. It's society. Society's watered down. You can't be a tough guy these days, or a tough woman. You know, you can't even look at people, as we said before. That is an offense, or just trying to make it an offense. So the world is, I think it's going to come full circle eventually. You know, we're going to have another 15 years or so before, you know, it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And then it'll probably go back to normal. Hopefully.
Let's hope for the best. You know, it's just, I come from the old days where you could throw down and have a beer afterwards and say, hey, I got a new buddy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Been there.
Or somebody I don't ever want to talk to again. Either way, it worked out both ways.
Yeah.
You know, you and I are Rolex lovers, right? I know you've got to do it for Rolex. You hear what's going on lately, Michael?
I do not know.
Well, there's the Rolex bandits now. You know, it was a big issue in Brazil, right? Where they case us out of
Are you talking about like in Los Angeles, in LA?
In Los Angeles, yeah. But it's going now. It's spreading. A man was just pistol whipped for his Rolex in Malibu.
Really?
What? In Malibu?
Man, on Tuesday, Tuesday was pistol whipped. He had his Rolex last week. His Rolex stolen in Malibu. He was basically taking pictures of his McLaren car. I mean, obviously, they pointed him out because he's obviously driving a very wealthy car. Mm. And when he was taking pictures, his people rolled up on him, bopped him in the head, stole his Rolex. And this is happening on Melrose. They're taking people down, just walking down the streets of Melrose to grab the Rolex.
It's happening a lot. It's on the news a lot around here, the local news. And it's got to a point where even I remember one night, because I have a few nice watches. And I said to my wife, I said, you know what? I think when I was going into LA for dinner a few weeks ago, I was like, maybe I won't wear this because it's just not worth it. Not that I'm, well, number one, I'm not looking for confrontation when I go out for a night out. Secondly, you know, if they've got a gun, then good luck fighting you out of that situation anyway. So it's just not worth it. But that's a really sad situation that even myself, that's a quote unquote tough guy, you know what I mean, has to second guess whether or not I should wear a watch, because it happens a lot. It is wild. They're following people home to their houses. They're robbing them there. The crime's out of control at the minute.
I mean, if you're not safe in Malibu, you're not safe anywhere.
Well, you're not safe anywhere, period. They had another situation in Malibu 2 months ago where a man and his two kids and his wife were on the beach, and then two homeless guys came up to him. The guy got in their face to get away from his kid and his wife and kids ran away, one guy chasing them. The other guy pulled out a machete and cut the guy on his forehead, just actually swiped him with the machete in friggin' Malibu again. And I grew up there. You're not safe anywhere. You know, another situation that occurred, and this isn't even with a human being, and this is down in your neck of the woods, Mike.
The coyote?
The coyote attack on the Huntington child Beach. On the beach. Yeah. His mom, TJ, his mom just went to take a dip, and the kid's on the beach. And the friggin' coyote comes over to get the kid.
There's got to be something wrong with that coyote, because coyote attacks are so... 9:45
p.m. at night. It was nighttime. That's coyote hunting time.
Yeah, but coyotes are pretty skittish animals. They generally run away from people. So for it to attack, like, I mean, I don't want to say that it had rabies or something, but there's something wrong with the coyote.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, TJ. And I think they did mention testing for rabies because, yeah, coyotes, that is very, very rare. But, of course, there was a big uproar about it. But
it's very rare.
We do live in their neck of the woods. They've been here for thousands of years, and then we move in, and then, God forbid, I mean, that child's going to be okay, and that's the main thing, you know. But
I hope so, too. We have them around here where I live at the beach here. And
they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
I don't want to say where I live. But, you know, it's just got to be careful. In Malibu, they got three of my cats one time. They would triangulate over a nighttime. They triangulate, watch a pattern, and boom, they nail them.
See, I lived in Minneapolis and had no wildlife, and I lived in the friggin' woods up there in Minneapolis. I move out here, one of the biggest metropolises in the country, and there's more scary-ass wildlife here than anywhere else, I think, in the country. I've seen mountain lion here in my neighborhood. I've seen a bobcat. You've got the coyotes that, like you said, are almost gang hunters, Bruce.
Snakes everywhere.
Seriously, like, it's a dangerous place.
I got up here, too. I was just, you know how mean a raccoon can get?
Oh, I had a pet raccoon. I know,
but I'm sure
they will tear you a new a-hole if they have to. They're scrappers. So I'm with a friend of mine, and we're in my jacuzzi out and back, right? In my pool, right? This big ass, I thought cat got in my backyard, and this big, like, I'm saying like 25-pound racky, just casually walking by the jacuzzi in the pool, just checking everything out. You know, it's like wildlife's beautiful, but I don't want to screw around with them.
No. Yeah.
Those guys will get you.
I've never seen a raccoon in real life in England.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Oh, I'm sure they are. I mean, I've seen them on cartoons and stuff. But yeah, in England, we don't really have extreme wildlife, you know, which I do. I'm fascinated by.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. After six Guinnesses, there's some extreme wildlife.
Hey, listen, on a Friday night on the main street outside the kebab shops, trust me, you're going to see a lot of wild stuff. But in terms of actual wildlife, I think as good as it gets is a badger. And you don't really run into them. Do you know what I mean? There's no bears. There's nothing like that. There's
nothing. You got bats.
We do have bats. Yeah, but the tiny little ones. But nothing really that's going to harm you. Nothing exciting. Beautiful birds of prey and stuff like that. But yeah, in terms of, you know, bears or mountain lions, yeah, nothing.
Lions and tigers and bears. Well, you know what? Whether it comes to wildlife or wild assholes that, you know, are causing these problems in the world, when I've taught self-defense, you know, the first thing I teach self-defense is observation. Observe and avoid. Observe and avoid. If you step into it, then you're in it. You know?
We always got told first lesson of martial arts is to avoid it.
That's absolutely correct. You know absolutely mean? Correct. Yeah. We know we can take care of ourselves. I don't need to.
But, you know, sometimes that's not.
You touch me.
Possibility.
Don't
you
put
know.
Your hands on me. Don't interfere with my loved ones.
I'm not that person anymore at all, though. At all. I mean, I haven't had a physical confrontation.
Oh, I walk away now. I won't get involved.
I got punched in New Orleans last year. I got punched in the face.
I heard about that. What the heck happened there?
I just laughed and walked away. Yeah, we'd never been to New Orleans. Keep hearing a lot about it. Great food. You got to go check it out, all the rest of it. So we had some time off. I said, yeah. So we went there for the weekend, my wife and the kids. And on the final night, because Bourbon Street's not really our kind of scene at all.
Mine either.
No. Hell on earth. But I said, come on, final night. Let's walk down there and soak up the vibe, so to speak. You got to check it out. I'm walking along. My son, Lucas, he's absolutely terrified because he's never seen anything like it in his life. And there was a group of young men, and they're playing drums, but on like some buckets upside down, right? And they're playing drums on these buckets, and there's like girls, and they're dancing and they're twerking and stuff. It was a wild scene, you know. So being a tourist, I pull my phone out and I'm doing a little Instagram story, and this guy comes up to me and says, yo, you can't film here. I said, yeah, I can. He said, no, you can't film here. I said, buddy, it's a tourist area. If I want to do a story, I'm going to do a story. And then he got right in my face. He said, put the fucking phone down. I said, suck my dick. And fair play to him. Because as soon as I said that, he went, boom, punched me right in the face. But I'm not trying to sound like a tough guy or whatever. But it was literally the weakest punch I've ever felt in my life. It literally was like that. There was just nothing.
Like
there
a liquor nothing. Punch. A liquor
it was,
punch.
It was just so, there was just like no force. It didn't hurt at all. Granted, I'm used to taking punches. So my initial reaction, knee-jerk reaction, wasn't posturing or nothing, was to literally just start laughing out loud. I was dying with laughter. I'm like, oh my God. I said, you're acting all tough and that's your best shot? I'm like, oh my God. I said, forget it. You're good.
Hit me with your best shot. Yeah.
And I'm with my kids. Can I just say that
that's more terrifying than anything? Like you just hit a dude with your hardest shot and he just starts laughing at you?
So.
All right, well, here's my next question, Michael. What if he cracked you? Would you come back?
Well. See, the thing is, I was with my wife and kids, you know, so I'm not going to start rolling around. And he was with there's a bunch of young, let's be honest, there's a gang of them all. Yeah, someone probably had a knife or a gun. So I wasn't going to do that anyway. But the funny thing is, so I talked about it on my podcast, right? And somehow word got back to this guy.
Oh,
he did his own video on YouTube. So now I've done my own. It's my biggest video on my YouTube channel. So like 3.5 million views. And I tell the story. Then he comes on and he tells his side of the story, which, to be fair to this guy, he might be a little toe rag, but he's very honest because it matches perfectly my side. You know, it's hilarious because you got my side, then you got his side. And thank you very much, because that's paid for that trip to New Orleans about five times over. It's brilliant. I'm like, can somebody else come and punch me, please? This is very profitable.
Mike might punch us if we don't get him out of here. We're past that hard time.
I'm going to let you out of here, Mike, but I got one thing to say to you.
Yes.
Rob Font, Marlon Vera. Come on.
What a fight.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'm just so impressed with both those men. Marlon Vera. I mean, he absorbed so many shots, but he never took a backward step. He was never disillusioned with anything. Every time Marlon kind of connected, it did a lot of damage. He almost took him out of there. I think at the end of every round, after round one, two, three, four, and five, had him all over the place. Rob Font, his face falling apart, still pushing forward, still trying to fight, still trying to win. Endless respect for that man. And Marlon Vera, the way he handled himself throughout the entirety of the fight, the post-fight speech, everything. I mean, I'm a good friend of Marlon's. We have the same coach in Jason Perillo. So, but endless respect for both men. And that fight there, that just kind of encapsulates the greatness that you see every weekend at the Apex or in the UFC Octagon, you know, because fights like that really are what this sport is all about. Unbelievable.
I appreciate you saying that, because when I've been talking about it with friends and such, I've been telling them that fight from beginning to end and to the interview had every bit of drama, everything I love, everything the sport is all about, with mutual respect right there. No bullshit, no asshole techniques, no whatever. That is what our sport is all about.
By the way, the biopic of Chito Vera someday will make a good film as well. His story is incredible.
I think his story is incredible. And one last thing, I think one of the things that helped Chito a lot is he has the ability, he's so great at working his long arm distance that even when he is getting tagged, it's almost like he's not taking the full force because of the distance he maintains. He's getting hit, but when Rob gets hit by Chito, that fist is going through his face.
That's right.
Not that Rob doesn't do the same.
No, of course. His
control is amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah, Chito was doing a very good job of rolling with the punches. He was he was blocking a lot of them on his elbows and his forearms. So when you first look, you think, well, he's eating a lot of shots, but his defense was very tight, very good. He was rolling with a lot of the punches. And just both men. You know, I mean, it was an incredible fight. I mean, you were there, Bruce, the atmosphere in there, a small crowd, but it sounded like there was thousands of people in there because everyone on their feet, losing their minds. Yeah, just I'm privileged to be a part of it. I absolutely love and I'm so grateful for my position with the UFC and, you know, because it still keeps me around this sport, you know. Right. So, yeah, I love it.
That makes two of us, Michael. I just re-upped for another 5 years. So.
Oh, nice. Congratulations. Hey. I mean, come on. Is that a surprise? I mean, the UFC wouldn't be the UFC without you, Bruce. I mean, what's it called? Joe Martinez does a great job, of course, but come on. You got to have the buff on the big ones.
Well, sharing with you is always an honor. And you're right. Saturday night was the loudest Apex show ever. Are you going to be in Phoenix next week?
I am not. No, sadly. So enjoy. I'll be sitting at home watching it on the couch.
Yep.
Best seat in the house, baby.
There you go, baby. Yeah, this is going to be a hell of a show. That card is sick.
Yes.
Sick. Well, I'll talk about it with TJ after. Let me let you go. Please.
Hey, there's
my best
the elephant
family.
In the room. We didn't talk about it. Jake Paul. We didn't talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Jake Paul. What's up?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing. Listen, he called me out. And I mean, the fact that he doesn't see what the issue is by calling me out, the joke's on you, Jake. I'm 43. He even put a tweet out and said, let's see if you're really about that life, Bisping. I'm like, about that life? I've been about that life for about 20 years. I'm 43 now. I've got one eye. I've got no knees. Do you know what I mean? I've had a long storied career. Now, in a one-on-one fight, I will put you to sleep. And that is an absolute fact. However, whilst it is very tempting to have a fight with this guy, a boxing fight, number one, getting cleared by a commission is going to be very difficult, but I'm sure we could do an exhibition bout. But I've been there, done it, got the t-shirt. I've moved on with my life. I don't want to risk my eye. And to be honest, I just feel that lowering myself to Jake Paul would tarnish my legacy, for want of a better word. Money's great, but there's lots of ways to make money. Sharing a ring with Jake Paul is not something I aspire to. I always wanted to fight Anderson Silva when he was the greatest fighter on the planet. I am not aspiring to fight a goddamn fucking YouTuber. Do you know what I mean? And he is out there like Eddie Hearn, the boxing promoter. It was so funny. They had that big fight at Madison Square Garden at the weekend. Yeah. Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor.
Great fight. Incredible fight.
And Jake Paul was like Eddie Hearn's shadow. And everywhere they went, he was just getting mocked. And because Eddie Hearn even said to his face, and I actually felt sorry for Jake, because Eddie Hearn said, you know, God bless you. You know, you're dedicating yourself and you've won a couple of fights. He said, but you will never, ever be world class. You'll never be a world champion. And if Dana White said that to me when I tried out for the Ultimate Fighter in 2005, that would have broke my heart, you know. But his retort was, will you give me anyone on your roster? I will fight them under 10 fights. So then Eddie Hearn turned around and said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, I've got a guy, he's your size, he's a cruiserweight, he's 1-0, and he went to the Olympics. So that means he's a good amateur boxer. He went to the Olympics. Jake Paul, nothing. He wants easy fights. Listen, no disrespect to the basketballer, to Ben Askren, great MMA guy, can't punch his way out of a wet paper bag. And for Tyron Woodley, sadly, that ship has sailed, you know? Yeah. You know, he's a mature man now. So Jake Paul, God bless him. He's a little sideshow. He's making tons of money. And I commend him for that. I really do. Nothing personal against the guy. But come on, buddy. Come on, mate.
Michael, I heard the California Commission would okay you possibly. I think I read that somewhere. But let me just say one thing direct, my friend. $5 million guaranteed pay-per-view piece. What do you say?
I say yes. Fuck it. Hey, I'm going to go down to the gym on Friday. I'm going to spar a few rounds. You know, nice and light, nothing right, crazy. Yeah. I like to do that still. You know, that's why I was always in good shape. My favorite part of training was sparring, because I love it, you know? So you're going to pay me to spar Jake Paul? Come on. Or box his head off, or beat him up, knock him out, whichever way you want to put it. I'm not intimidated by the kid. And if there's a bit of money on the table, I'd be a fool not to pick it up.
I think he has the kind of personality you could definitely get up for a fight for.
Yeah. You know? Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
And I would love, I would love to see the Michael Bisping of old and of now, and the shit talking that's going to happen in that buildup.
The pre-fight
that's
going to
be half the fun
there. Yeah. But I'm not actively pursuing a fight with Jake Paul. That to say that sentence is embarrassing.
All I know is if you do it, I'm going to do everything I can to announce it.
Well, it's probably not going to happen. All right, well, gents, I'll leave you to it.
You
enjoy
go.
The rest of the show. Buff, Bruce, pardon me, always a pleasure.
Buff is great. That's my nick. It's okay.
TJ, pleasure, my friend. Have a great rest of the show. And do this again real soon.
I forgot to mention your son, Lucas.
Yes. Right?
I apologize.
Don't be silly.
Lucas, Rebecca, and happy Mother's Day to Rebecca. Will you please tell her that for me?
I shall, Bruce. Yes. Thank you very much.
Send me some info on Rebecca. Let me send you a video for Mother's Day for Rebecca.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah, give me
that. That will be good. And speaking of the devil, you just walked in with my daughter. They've just come back from the horse riding lessons. It's a tough life that they live.
You heard what I said, Michael. If you get that to me, I'll have it to you in time.
Boom. I'll do that. All right, guys, take care. All the best.
See, Mike.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Thank you for having me.
Bye, champ. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
One of the best in the business.
Always fun. Great interview. Great character. Just a fine human being. I've really enjoyed my growing friendship with Michael Bisping. It's awesome.
It's one of those first fighters, too, when you go back to the Ultimate Fighter. We've seen him go from a relatively unknown athlete to one of the biggest stars in mixed martial arts history, a Hall of Famer, and someone who's just phenomenal now in the commentary role.
And he is. He is. He's excellent. He really is. I mean, how can you not believe what comes out of his mouth for a man that lived it and did it all?
Right.
You
know? I mean, no one can say they've given more to the sport than Michael Bisping.
No. Knees, neck, still, you know, eyes.
Yeah.
Much less everything else.
The idea of losing vision for anything in this world, there's not many things that people will go headlong into, come out the other side without an eye, and still say they have no regrets.
No, it's the loss of vision is a very scary thing for sure.
Yeah.
So TJ, moving on here, there's some stories I want to go over, but I do want to say to you, TJ, I know you're busy with your work and fathered him and husbanded him and all that goes with it. If you get a chance to watch this 90-minute documentary or whatever,
I'm going to watch it this week. I'm traveling out to Phoenix. Maybe I'll see you out there, but I get a lot of downtime for the travel. So I will definitely look at it on Amazon Prime.
Cool. I'll be quick in and out. I'm getting their Friday night show and then I'm out of there Sunday morning.
You're a busy man.
Yeah, I want to get back. I like my Sundays at home. You know, I want to have Sundays.
Oh, I feel you. I feel you. There's nothing. And I'm coming back early on Sunday as well because it is Mother's Day.
I mean, it's hard to maintain a relationship if you're gone every weekend.
100%.
Much less a fun dating life or whatever.
So. I mean, you know, that's why I had to lock in my wife early so I could do this as a married guy.
I'll lock in a wife at some point in the near future. We'll see what's up.
Nah, you'll probably get divorced again before you get married.
No, I've never been divorced.
I know.
Unless you look on the internet and you see that I was married to some woman named, I forget what they call her, and I have a son named Doogie. Or
what?
Dougie. Yeah, on the, you know, the celebrity network, all these crap sites.
Oh, yeah, you're worth $1 billion, right?
Yeah, but they say that I was married and I have a son named Dougie.
Okay. Really? Wow. In what world?
News to me.
Yeah.
News to me. I haven't sent that alimony check out. So
right. Well.
Okay. Let's go over a few things here. All the kidding aside. Boy, that Depp trial got ugly. I think it's going to be.
Oh my goodness.
God, did that get ugly. Oof.
I mean, there's nothing but video clips where he's saying stuff. And by the way, like Johnny Depp was just a savage on that stand, just the way he said things, like I don't know, man, it was almost defamation of her character when he was testifying.
I'm not going to comment. I question her character much more than I do the other, and I'm not taking a man's side here.
The
way it was presented. Let's see how it all falls out, but just ugly. I don't even want to know what his attorney bill for this. And the other thing is, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, or you probably are. This has really cost him his career. We're talking about, up to date, we're talking about one of the finest actors of our generation.
Yeah.
Literally. Okay.
Yeah. Truthfully.
He lost his Pirates of the Caribbean movie role. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
He lost his Pirates of the Caribbean movie role. He was due to make a whopping $22.5 million for.
Wow. Maybe he can come back from this. I don't know. I mean, we're a society and a country that likes to forgive and forget a lot.
Especially for worse things than this.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he doesn't get that role back, but I think we'll see another blockbuster with Johnny Depp before long.
But he'll work forever. He's just, again, one of our finest actors out there.
And it's his identity, Bruce. Like, what is he going to do? He's not going to, you know, fade into relative oblivion. And
No. He's got to get through this. Got to get through this horrible hiccup in his thing. Whatever, whoever's at fault here, it'll all come out.
Right. Yeah.
I don't want to go into it too far, but there, you know, people are saying that Putin may have soon officially declare war on the Ukraine.
Right.
United States.
Which I don't know what that totally means. I mean,
I don't know.
Anybody that doesn't live in Russia, the way it's portrayed is this is a war. It's already a war. So
it's already a war.
Yeah. It's I believe that if he formally declares war on Ukraine, he's able to like activate reserve military soldiers in Russia, but I don't know.
Would do that. I mean, he's breaking every law there is. He would probably do that no matter what. I mean, to this man.
Yeah. And there's another thing that if he declares war and then tries to like end it on a certain date, there's like a victory day in Russia going back to World War II. And maybe he wants to declare war so he can end it on this day. I don't know.
All right. Well, that's enough said on that subject. We'll see.
I just get scared, Bruce, when I watch the news. It's just like, are we on the verge and brink of World War III?
Isn't that what I said when we started? And I'm not a pessimist. It's just it's dangerous.
Right.
It's a button away. So
I'm no longer going to tell you to not worry about things after COVID. So,
it's not so much worry. It's just being a realist, you know?
Right. No, I hear you. I think television tends to sensationalize things and we get driven towards this sort of like worst case scenario all the time. And very rarely does it ever hit. But like I said, I was telling you not to worry about COVID for way too long. And obviously we should have worried about it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The only COVID news now is that our vice president has COVID.
Yeah.
Tested negative after return to the White House when she went over to, you know, she went over there.
Right.
No, that was Pelosi that went over there.
Pelosi went over there. Yeah.
Pelosi went over, but Harris tested negative or Harris test. Yeah. She had COVID. She's tested negative. Yep. Jimmy Kimmel now has COVID. He's got.
Yeah. People are still getting COVID. It's just as, you know, prominent as it was. I mean,
they're talking about long-term effects being more potentially dangerous than the actual symptom effects now from these new variations.
I mean, thankfully, we've both had COVID at this point. Thankfully, I have suffered no long-term consequences that I know of. You know, knock on wood, I hope I don't get it again. But like, that's the thing too, Bruce. Like, I feel like it's an inevitability. Like, if these variants keep going around, there's going to be another flare up and we're probably all going to have to deal with it again.
No, it's good to be consistent. We got to deal with it.
Yeah. So get your, get your vaccination, wash your hands and, distance properly when you need to.
But, you know, I was just in Vegas, as we know, and I was just in other places and people are not wearing masks, but I still like, what I do is that when I get in elevators, I put on my mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm in crowds, but you know, this weekend's going to be jammed and, I'm doing everything I can.
Just do what you can, you know, and, stay in shape in case you do get COVID and you'll be good again. Time. Of course. Yeah.
Very rare I'm ever out of shape. Just my own. I've been that way forever. I can't change. All right. Let's talk about...
You got those ab implants, so you might as well work for them.
Just a constant laugh every time I hear that crap. Okay. Everybody that says that, get off your butt, work out, eat right, and see if you can see your...
Right. Or you go get some ab implants.
I think it's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. It's
ridiculous. Yeah.
It's just so ridiculous. Okay. Now what's also ridiculous too, you know, they're coming out with this Masvidal, Kobe Covington situation.
Oh man.
The pictures with the broken tooth. Now, what is this thing about the brain damage? I mean, has there been any documentation?
I don't know.
I mean, I've heard this from other people.
This is a charge that they're waging on Masvidal. I don't know. I mean, I struggle to think that Covington sustained brain damage from one shot, but those things do happen. This was an assault. I'm of two minds on this. I don't think Jorge Masvidal should have done this. It's against the law. I'm never going to condone that. No. But at the same time, there are repercussions for doing things the way that Colby does. And again, I'm not saying that this is warranted, but I understand. And, you know, maybe he will think differently about dealing with this. I hope he doesn't have brain damage. I hope, you know, everything shakes out for the better for him. And I don't know. We'll see where he goes from here.
We'll find out. We will see. Right now, where we go from here is UFC 274 in Phoenix. And I wish the best for Colby and everything involved there. It all comes out in the wash, however it should be. Justin Gaethje, Charles Oliveira for the lightweight title.
What a good fight.
Can't wait. You know, the Rocky Bruiser against the talented ground fighter and Bruiser himself. This is going to be a very technical, very talented fight.
I mean, Oliveira is another guy that I never thought would become UFC champion. You know, he's been around the UFC for so long, always been a contender, you know, always a bridesmaid, but never a bride. And, you know, he defended that title against Poirier. He looks phenomenal and he's going to have to be phenomenal if he's going to get past the human highlight in Justin Gaethje.
Well, Justin Gaethje seems very, very up for this fight.
Biggest fight of his career. I think this truly is the biggest fight of his career. And obviously, you know, he's been in there, he's had Khabib and things like that, but the time is now for one Gaethje.
Yeah. We'll have him on the show shortly after, but this is going to be very exciting. I am tickled pink and can't wait to announce Rose Namajunas and Carlos Barza. Can't wait to see this fight.
It's a phenomenal rematch.
In that octagon, it's a phenomenal rematch. Chandler and Tony Ferguson. Okay.
This card is stacked, man. Like
Shogun Hua is back.
Yeah.
Against Ovince St. Preux.
Yeah.
And then Joe Lozon. When's the last time Joe Lozon stepped in?
Oh, man, I don't remember.
And coming back is Donald Cerrone, which at this point in Donald Cerrone's career, I think is actually a really good fight. You have two guys that are basically
legends.
Similar in age and experience coming at each other.
And legends, you know. Joe's not as you know, well-known as Cowboy is, but Joe loves to throw down, not afraid of a fight. It's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, Matt Chanel is coming back in the card. Hopefully his fight won't get canceled for, the second or third time? Third time. So good at that. No, this card is loaded. So I'll definitely see everybody from the Footprint Center in Phoenix, Arizona. How big of a stadium is that?
It's where the Phoenix Suns play. So it's pretty big.
Okay. We'll probably sell it out, I'm sure. Without a doubt.
I mean, with that card, you got to, right?
You got to. Got to. So here's some collectible talk. Brian, my brother, bought a 1961 Fleer basketball wax pack, of which I have two. I could run and show you what it looks like, but I don't want to leave the table.
I think you've showed us them before in the past.
I have showed you that one.
Yeah.
He paid like $300 for it, like 7 years ago.
Uh-huh.
He sold it this week for $7,200.
What?
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Oh, I'm holding on to mine. They're gold bricks. He has so much stuff. I mean, if property taxes come around, Brian's like James Bond. He opens up a drawer. There's like 1,000 a PSA graded.
Just throw something. Yeah.
You pick one up, you put it on eBay, doesn't even miss it, and then the property taxes are paid.
So he's just getting rid of stuff because he probably needs more space to get more stuff.
That, and he's got like duplicates. He's probably got another five of these packs.
Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Jack Nicholson's axe in The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it's sold for?
$250,000.
Close. $175,000.
Okay.
And the world's
getting better at this.
No, you're getting better. And the world's largest blue diamond.
Ooh.
Right? The largest blue diamond. Let me get the size of this before I quote the price. 15.10 carat step cut gem sold at Sotheby's in Hong Kong for $57.5 million.
Oh my God.
The estimate was 48, sold for 57.5.
What do you even do with that? That's so big. What do you do with that?
I don't know. I guess you put it in a glass jar in a.
Right. I mean, you're not wearing that. You know what I mean?
It. You're not putting it out of your house. I guess.
Yeah. It's got to be like an ornamental piece in your home.
Yeah. Well, that's a hell of an ornament, isn't it?
I mean,
that on your Christmas tree.
I would not want that around, Buff. I'd just sell it if it was mine.
The way they're stealing Rolexes now, I don't think I'd want it around either.
Seriously.
Yeah, totally.
You can't tell anyone you have it. You know what I mean? Like anyone knows you have it, they're going to try to break in your house.
Did I tell you that Mike Tyson is making ear-shaped gummy?
Did see this. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. Mike calls me on FaceTime.
Oh, yeah? I mean, he's a nice guy. I like Mike.
He's a nice guy. I'll get a call. My driver in Vegas is his driver. We've all become – I've known Mike for years, but the driver and I become friends. They go out together. They'll call me, and, like, you know, Mike's always – it's funny. I'll get this call, like, at 10 o'clock at night. It's Tyson calling me to say hi.
That's great.
It's amazing how people get really more peaceful unless they're on airplanes with assholes throwing bottles of water at them. I don't know what's going to happen with that
one. Dude. I mean, again, that's the sort of thing that we're talking about with Bisping. Like, sometimes you need to be able to just beat up somebody, you know, not hurt them. And that's the thing, too. Like, I think you'll attest to this. It's that old Fight Club saying, like, how much do you really know about yourself if you've never been in a fight?
Well, you know my line. You don't know who you are until you've been punched in the face.
Right. And some people deserve to be punched in the face.
Without question. Let's see here. This is a feel-good story, but it's a weird story. Okay.
Okay. I like those kind of stories.
A Massachusetts family living on a golf course, which has been trashed repeatedly with golf balls since they've lived there, smashing 26 of their windows. They live near the fairway or the 15th hole of a place called the Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston, Massachusetts.
Right.
They've been there for 4 years. They've realized they've been pelted by 700 golf balls.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, this is a safety issue. They're smashing coming through the windows, right?
Yeah. Like, what kind of insurance do you have to have?
They decided to go to court.
Uh-huh.
And the court awarded them $100,000 in damages.
Okay. But, are they going to put up a net?
Wait, but they also awarded them $3.4 million for distress. They received almost $5 million in this settlement from the golf course.
Come on. You live next to a golf course. Like, you have to have some of this be expected. You know, what's crazy to me, Bruce, is I assume this person lives next to somebody. Is this just going to be something that everyone sues up and down the block now because of this crazy award?
What I was about to say is this going to set one of those precedents?
Yeah. I mean, it's a legal precedent for sure.
Yeah. Where suddenly you got, I mean, how many golf country clubs do people know? I've been to my friends' homes that live on golf courses, and the balls come in the backyard, but not necessarily breaking the windows. It's got to be the way the house is positioned.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So whose fault is that?
Well, I mean...
Design? I don't know.
I kind of think that you know what you're in for when you move next to a golf course. I just think with $100,000, which I'm all for, like, if you really deserve $100,000, that's fine, but you got to buy a net, you know what I mean? Like, put something up so this doesn't happen anymore. Because $3.5 million or whatever, that's great, Bruce, but that's not going to stop the balls. It's not. Maybe it makes you move. Right. Maybe it makes you okay with it. But I mean, I don't know. They just got
a new house. They can move off that golf course tomorrow morning.
Yeah, but that's a desirable place to be. That house might be worth more than $3.5 million.
Well, if they're going to, there's got to be a thing in the settlement that, hey, okay, we paid you. Now, if golf balls hit your house, that's your fault.
Right. This is on you.
Yeah, it's on you. Okay, now, one thing that I do like seeing is the convictions being put forth against these people guilty of the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot.
Right.
A former New York City police officer was convicted Monday from assaulting a Washington, D.C. police officer who you've seen, you'd recognize him in a heartbeat. You've seen him interviewed many times, suffering post-traumatic stress from the situation. The 56-year-old ex-NYPD officer now faces a maximum of 20 years in prison. They're handing down indictments.
Wow.
Yeah.
20
and I have
years.
No problem with it. I mean, I'd rather get 20 years, but.
Again, let's take politics out of it, okay? Anybody that storms the Capitol and breaks in with force deserves what they got coming.
That's my whole point. And I
doesn't matter if you're red or blue. Like, dude, you can't do that.
Well, we have a situation like that. Another thing that's kind of horrific in March, TJ, now I don't know if you can explain this. A record 4.5 million Americans quit their jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Quit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of that has to do with employers requiring workers to return to the offices.
My wife went back to work last week for the first time in 2 years, went into the office. Wow. But they only do it now 3 days a month.
Yeah. What do they call that? Hybrid?
Yeah. I don't know. Basically, she goes in 3 days a month and they just do like the meetings that they can't do, you know, over Zoom. It's like teaching meetings and stuff like that. So I don't know. I think it's. COVID has taught us a lot. I think it's taught, you know, workplaces, maybe they're not all that necessary. You know, maybe you don't need to have everyone come in. But it's also taught a lot of people the benefits of working at home and some for some being their own boss. You know, a lot of people were forced to go out and take a career change. So the idea that people are quitting, it's not all that surprising. Because I think COVID forced us to reevaluate our lives and, you know, our positions in life. And if people are quitting and finding a happier life, I'm all for it.
I'm all for it, too. You know, it's all good. Whatever works. But I mean, it's good.
You and I are incredibly lucky, Bruce, to do what we love every day. And I think that's adds to a quality of life for us. It probably adds to our life expectancy. And I just wish everybody could be so lucky.
Yeah. And I just encourage that and try to motivate again, be a role model to your sphere of influence. Like I say, at the end of the show, one other thing here, I'm with you on that. This is kind of disturbing, but we know species become extinct almost on a daily basis. Right. So they now say 1/5 of all reptile species face the risk of extinction. 1/5.
It doesn't surprise me in a sense because a lot of reptiles go back to the dinosaur age. So
yes.
You know, they've been around for that long. Like the world is changing. And yes, we can talk all day about, you know, climate human impact and climates, but that one doesn't surprise me that much.
Well, they figure that 40.7% of amphibians are facing extinction. 25.4% of mammals are facing extinction and 13.6% of bird species are facing extinction. How they come down to this, obviously I'm not a scientist, but there you go. That's it.
Yeah.
All right. Exciting show this weekend. And what's next week? We're back at the Apex. There you go. I got 2 more weeks I have 18 days left of 64 years old. TJ, I'll be 65 on May 21st.
Unbelievable, Bob.
Yeah. I'm going to take the last 3 weeks. My last show is May 14th. I'm taking the rest of the month off and part of June.
Good for you. You going somewhere?
Yeah. I've got nice. 3 trips planned. I don't want Good to say on you. The air.
That's awesome, Buff.
Yeah. One's going to be,
you got a companion.
I plan on having a nice time, TJ. I'm going to take a boys weekend.
Nice.
One weekend's going to be a boys weekend.
I like that.
And I'm going to go away. I was going to go to the south of France, but I discovered some news that's going to be announced soon. And I've delayed my trip to the south of France for a couple of months. And that's all
okay.
I'm going to say.
All right.
That's all I'm going to say.
I like that.
When
that's
you hear
good.
What this news is, it's going to blow you away.
I'm excited too.
But no, I'm going to hit wine country and I'm going to go to one of my favorite tropical paradises. And I'm going to go.
Great. That's awesome. Well deserved, Buff.
Thank you. Got to celebrate, you know, as long as everybody's happy and healthy at home.
I mean, you're only 65 once.
Yeah, that's true. Well, hopefully once doesn't mean I don't make it past 60.
No. You're only 66 once too.
Yeah. It's all good. I feel like I'll be 18 in my heart forever. And on outside, 30 years old forever, and on the inside, the erector set that I be.
Right. I mean, the ab implants.
Yes, of course. All right, TJ, anything else to go over? I miss anything here?
No, I don't think so. For me, though, coming up on Friday at the Ainsworth in Phoenix on 2nd Street, right near the venue for UFC 274, I'll be live with my show on UFC Fight Pass called Extra Rounds. I'll be hanging out, got a meet and greet with a couple of fighters, and I'll be joined by UFC strawweight Vanessa Demopoulos. So please come hang out with me on Friday at the Ainsworth in Phoenix.
Oh, very cool. Say hi to Vanessa for me, will you please?
Will do.
Also, I understand you recently got a delivery of Icon Meals.
Oh, yes. And so I had the Titan burrito this morning.
It was good, huh?
Really good.
Yeah.
Really good. And the stuff that Todd sent me, like, you know, I'm a bit of a picky eater.
Yeah.
He sent me stuff that, like, I would be a fool if I don't like it.
Well, give me a couple examples.
We got a beef stir fry. We got I'm a little nervous about this one, but I think it sounds kind of good. Pumpkin and white chocolate pancakes.
Oh, their pancakes are amazing. They're protein pancakes and I haven't had that one, but they're amazing. They're amazing.
Chopped chicken and rice, which again is perfect for me because I'm a plain kind of guy. But a whole bunch of stuff. And Bruce, I was blown away at how good the food looks in the package. Like, this isn't your typical, you know, pre-prepared television dinner meal. This is high quality food.
No, so, and the sodium contents are low. And
and it looks filling too. Like, that's the thing too. Like, the Titan burrito, like, I'm still full. Like, it's lunchtime now. I'm still doing well. I don't think I want to eat anything right now.
No, it's very 640 calories. Very,
yeah. Very, yeah. Very easy to prepare. Tastes good. It's awesome. So Icon Meals might have a customer in me.
Good, good. Well, we'll work out something for you. You know what I'm saying?
I like it.
The burrito, would you 2 minutes in the microwave?
Yep.
That's all you need. 3 minutes, yep. A little too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely don't like not being able to eat my food for 20 minutes because it's too hot.
Yeah. Or picking it up and the burrito falls apart. No, right. It's all good. Yeah, thanks, Todd, for that. I also want to thank FanDuel, our sponsor of the show. FanDuel, the place to go for fantasy sports and sports betting. And also Puncher's Chance, Sweet Nectar of the Bourbon Gods, 6 award-winning gold medals, and voted the top 5 best-sipping bourbon in America. So Puncher's Chance can be gotten all over the country now, or just go to puncherschancebourbon.com and have it delivered right to your house.
I saw you all over the PFL.
Oh, yeah. Do you like that?
It was interesting. Yes. Need to see. Making moves, Buff.
Major sponsor, PFL. And they ran like 4 commercials every show on ESPN.
I saw it.
Yep. All good. All right. And of course, you don't see my face on the cage, but we all understand the reasoning behind that.
Right. And, you know, I like the deal that you got with Puncher's Chance because it's not all about you. You know what I mean? No. It's yours, but it's very much about the product itself.
I want the product to create its own identity. That's why it's not called It's Time Bourbon. Or
right. Just like my and it's product. Created its own identity, award-winning identity.
Yep. I'm a partner and vested partner, and I'm a spokesperson. And hey, it's my bourbon, and I love that. It's my partners and my bourbon, and I love it. Fun business, TJ. Fun business.
That's great.
Okay. All right, TJ. I'm going to sign off, too. I will see everybody from the Octagon on Saturday, Phoenix, Arizona. Can't wait.
And I'll be at your hotel, Buff, so maybe we can say hi.
I call me Friday. I'll be working in my room Friday night, getting everything prepared. I'll be in by 6.
All right.
So give me a call.
I'll check.
We'll have a drink or something.
Sounds good, Buff.
All right. And outside of that, I've got some cool news coming out that I want to wait till next week to tell you about. But let me just say this. Everybody, set your goals, write them down, be a role model to your sphere of influence. So when you set on that path to success, you're the best you can be and performed at the best you can be. And that's what life is all about, because if you perform at your best, whether you're number one, number two, number 10, or the champion of the world, you can take pride in the fact that you gave your best shot. And that's what we're all about here on It's Time Radio. That's winning. And with that being said, Buffer out. I got to go train. I got to get an announcer shape for Saturday night. Cheers.
Hi, everybody. I've had an absolute blast recording your championship intros on audio and also on video. And for those of you that didn't know, the videos can be done special exactly the way you like them, because these are green screens and we can do them with a scene behind me. Do you want a fighting scene? Do you want a beach scene? Do you want a race car scene? Any scene you want, we can give it to you. It's your theme and my pleasure. Just write our offices and we will answer you with the exact fee involved and how it'll get done. So here we are, and now it's time, and it's your choice. Cheers!
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.